Welcome to Wake Up Podcast with Viv Trader. Viv is a curious person with the desire to embrace different opinions and expertise. Her focus is health, well-being, environmental, and political. She holds a non-judgmental approach and she is objective. Her approach is that in order for us to create change and push boundaries, we need to consider all possible angles. A wider range of influences and opinions are needed. She thinks this is especially true for tasks which involve creative problem solving, innovation, and collaboration. Viv's ambition is to raise your awareness and contribute to a better world. She is also the founder of Vivalicious Food, which produces an innovative vegan baby food with added omega-3 from an algae oil. www.vivaliciousfood.com.
Today, I have the real honor and pleasure of having you, Dr. Lotte Valentin, here as my guest. I'm so excited to have you here all the way from Arizona. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I can't wait to, you know, share my knowledge with your audience. It's a pleasure to be here.
You have so much wisdom and so much to share. So now let's dig in straight away. Can you please tell me, who are you?
Who am I? That is a good question. Well, let's go back to the beginning, because I was actually born and raised in Sweden, in a suburb of Stockholm, in Vällingby, for those of you who live in Sweden. And I moved to the United States when I was 21 and married an American, and then proceeded to go to Boston University after working my first year in the United States while my then husband finished his senior year or his last year at Boston University. And the original plan was actually that we were going to go back to Sweden because I was a student at Stockholm University. I ended up transferring into Boston University and then graduated and stayed in the United States. So I am still here after all these years. And then I worked for IBM in my youth. I was a programmer and systems analyst. And then I started having kids and stayed home, been on a leave from that company. And then I had three kids. And after my last child was born, I had my first near-death experience. And what that near-death experience means is usually what that means is either you're dead or you're very close to death. And it usually involves an out-of-body experience where you leave your body, you go to the other side. Some people will communicate with departed loved ones or have other spiritual experiences. So that was my first experience. And I was hemorrhaging. Well, during the birth, first of all, when my daughter was born, she was born in a 7.4 earthquake because we lived in California. And I would say that was one of the times in my life when I thought I was going to die. And a lot of us have had experiences like that when we're almost in a car accident, or, you know, we're so close to being killed or something is going to happen. You know, you have that your life flashes before your eyes kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that was the experience in the earthquake. And I was contracting 3 minutes apart. And everybody was just hanging over the table to keep me. I would have flown off the table. So the nurse is hanging over me, my husband, and everybody in that in the hospital. And we lost all the power in the hospital, and the generators kicked in. And it was so bad that my labor actually stopped, and I was contracting like 3 minutes apart. So I was getting pretty close to giving birth, because the fear, I thought, this is it. We're all going to die, and we're just going to be buried in this rubble. And I feel so bad for my boys. My boys were 6 and 3 and a half. My parents were visiting from Sweden, taking care of the kids. And we managed to call them. The phones were still working, and my kids and my parents were okay. The labor started back up. I gave birth, and then I hemorrhaged the first time. So right after they gave me the baby, I just leaned backwards and just screamed for my husband. I'm like, take the baby, take the baby. And then I had like this mountain of blood clots coming out, and we still didn't have any power in the hospital. So they put me on a drip to help contract the uterus back down and squeeze out those blood clots. And they kept me in the hospital for an extra day. And then they said, okay, everything looks good. You can go home now. And then what happened is, about 8 or 10 days later, I had this huge, my friends were having a baby shower for me because I had two boys and now I had a girl. And I went to the park and this huge blood clot came out, the size of a baby's head. And I told my friend, I said, something is really, really wrong. I gotta go. And I went home and my parents called my husband. He came home from work. We went to the ER. They did a manual examination and they said, well, there isn't that much blood coming out right now. Could have been a second lining. And this is 1992. And they kept me there for about 2 hours. And then they said, okay, well, it looks fine. And you can go home now. There was no blood work. Nothing was done. Just manual examination. And then the next day, the same thing happens. Another big blood clot comes out. We called the hospital and I said, I'm not going. It was late at night because it stopped. They're not going to do anything. And it was decided I should see the doctor where we lived in Huntington Beach, California, the next morning. Went to the doctor. He did a manual inspection, said, it could have been two linings that came out. No blood work, nothing. Just sent me on my way. That evening or late afternoon, like around 5, another blood clot came out. And the same as this huge blood clot. So we said, okay, well, we have to go back to the ER because I can't keep bleeding like this. So we went back to the ER. They came in, did a manual inspection, said, it's not much bleeding right now. And left me there, closed the door. I didn't even have a bell or button or anything to call for help. I just lied on that table. And I finally started bleeding again. So I'm thinking, wow, oh my gosh, I'm finally bleeding. They're going to figure out something is wrong. So, the nurse came to check on me and thank God she did, because I mean, if nobody had checked on me, I would have probably have died and they would just have found me in there. So she came to check on me as I was bleeding and her jaw just dropped and she was, oh my gosh, she saw all the blood and I could hear the call on the loudspeaker, OBGYN, stat to the ER, OBGYN, stat to the ER. And I'm just thinking, well, at least they figured out something is wrong. So this middle-aged physician comes running full speed into the ER with a younger physician in tow. They do another manual inspection. As they do the manual inspection, another large blood clot comes out. And I try to sit up and tell the doctor. So all I can say is, I don't feel too good because I could just feel I was just fading. And he just pushed me down onto the bed and the whole room filled with staff. And they started tipping the table so that my head would go towards the floor and my feet were going up in the air. And I had a nurse on my right coding my blood pressure. And the nurse on my left was trying to place an IV, but my veins were already collapsing because I was all now going into shock. And so the nurse on my left yells, 50 over 15, hurry. And that was my blood pressure. And it was shortly after that, I just feel like I'm falling. So imagine jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. It was just this free fall feeling. And it was shortly after she quoted that blood pressure that I knew that I was dying. And that was very different from the experience I had when I gave birth, when we had an earthquake, when I thought I was going to die. This was a knowing. I know that I'm dying. So a very different experience. And I'm thinking, what's taking this nurse so long? Why can't she place that IV? And it was shortly after that quotation on my blood pressure that I felt my soul trying to leave my body. It was like this pull out of my chest, kind of. And as I'm lying there, I'm a complete atheist. I don't believe in anything. I don't believe in the afterlife. I don't believe in the spirit world. I don't believe in God and angels and Jesus, you name it. I believed when you die, it's black. That's it. You're gone. So I was, very scientific. Yeah. I had no beliefs in any kind of religion or spirituality at all. And as I'm lying there, I know that there is only one thing left to do, and it's to pray to God to save my life. So I'm lying there and I say, please, God, please let me live. I have 3 children under the age of 6, a 6-year-old, a 3.5-year-old, and a newborn baby. They need a mother. And it was shortly after that I was just, sucked out of, I can't describe it, but it's like you get sucked out almost like a vacuum cleaner. It says 1 second you're inside your body and the next second you're not inside and you're outside. But as I was outside my body, the first thing that I thought was, wait a second, how can this be? How can I still be me and be outside my body? Right? Because I didn't have any belief that that could even be possible. But as I'm outside the body, I know that I belong to the body down on the table. Like, I know that's my house. Like, I live in a house or in an apartment. That's your home, yeah. Right? That's your body goes home to its shelter. The soul lives in the body. But there's also an understanding that there is no time. As I'm in this state, there is no time on the other side. But I also had access to past, present, and future because there's no separation. It was just all one. But you're also connected to everything and you are one with everything that exists. So, and then, you know, I'm just floating around above my body. And then within a split second, the same thing, I get sucked back in. And so, and then the next day, so then, of course, I'm in the hospital and I got all these machines hooked up and they're, you know, making sure I'm not going to pass out again. And as I'm lying in that hospital bed the next day, I hear my sister-in-law in the left corner of my ceiling and she says, everything's going to be okay. Like, you're going to be okay. And I'm thinking, what is happening? Now I think I have, you know, was that a hallucination or what happened yesterday? How could I have been outside my body? But it was more real than real. And now I think I'm hearing my sister-in-law in the ceiling who had passed away 10 days earlier. And that just continued, right? So then that whole opening to here in the spirit world began literally the day after. Then I was really, really sick for a good year. Well, actually, it took 6 years. It had bone marrow suppression. So I wasn't making enough red blood cells, white blood cells, or platelets. And I had like bruises and I kept getting pneumonia and it was a mess. And as I'm struggling to heal, 2 years later, I have a second experience. And but during these 2 years, there is always this feeling of the soul not being back fully in my body. So it always felt like my soul was leaving. I would try and help my kids with their shoes and then I would feel my soul floating out. And I would say, no, no, we're not leaving. Come back. And I would always hold on to it, waking up in the middle of the night. And all these feelings were always there. Plus a lot of other things with electrical sensitivity and watches stopping and television turning on and all these different crazy things that we now know are common things that happen to people. You know, we are electromagnetic beings. So when things are off, it makes sense that we're going to interfere with other electromagnetic things. So then 2 years later, I have another experience and I wake up in the middle of the night and I have that same, you know, the feeling of my soul is leaving, which was just a constant for me because it was just, you know, several times a day I was struggle with holding my soul. So it was a very fine line sort of being on earth and being halfway out of my body. But then in the middle of the night, the same thing happened. And I could not hold my soul back. I'm lying there going, no, we're not leaving. But then again, it just pulls right out. But this second experience was very, very different from my first experience. And I always joke that they saved me too quickly in the ER because I didn't get the full experience that I needed in order to activate my life path. Because I was such a scientist and I didn't believe in any of it. I needed another experience to kind of show me that, yes, this is in fact real. And so the second experience, I just tumble through darkness. So think Star Wars, like you're just tumbling through outer space. Mm-hmm. But then I get to this place that I call the mid station. And I call it the mid station because I was aware of like floors above me, so to speak, and floors below me. So think of going into an elevator and there's 100 floors and you get off on floor 50. And then you know that there are floors below you and you know there are floors above you. It was that kind of feeling. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up in this, what I call the mid station. Also thinking of skiing, you know, growing up in Europe, the mid station there, you can go all the way to the top of the mountain. Yeah. You can go to the base of the mountain, but you're kind of in the middle. So it was this very weird place. I was in this mid station. And as I get there, I don't have a body. I'm just in a soul form. At least I don't see my body. And I hear the most beautiful music. Now, you cannot make this music on Earth because I tried. I sat at our synthesizer that had over 200 sounds for like a week trying to create. Isn't there any sound on this that sounds like what I heard? But I couldn't find a sound that sounded as beautiful as the music I heard. Now, you know, so many years later, I've heard other people saying, I've heard that music. But I get to this place and I hear the most beautiful music. And I look to my right, and what do I see? This tiny little log cabin, almost like the size of a sauna, like a Swedish sauna.
Yeah.
And I always laugh at, you know, what we see. Why did I see this log cabin? Other people see green fields or flowers, mm-hmm. right? I see a little log cabin. So it's just funny what shows up. So I'm thinking the music must come from this log cabin. So I open the door, I look inside, but it's empty. So then I look to the left and it's a mirror image of the log cabin on my right. So I open the door, I look inside, but it's empty. But then I become aware of this growing light, like a brilliant white light. So imagine shining a spotlight through fog, because it's going to sort of light up the whole fog, because the light is everywhere, because it fills everything just like fog fills your mm-hmm. whole, you, as far as you can see, but it's all bright white light. So it's like a fog of bright white light. It's the best description I have. So this light comes from behind me, and I'm turned. So as I'm still hearing this music. So I turn around in this light, and I see an outline of angels, and the music is coming from the angels, but I don't believe in angels. So, right. So here I'm looking and I'm like, that's the music is coming from the angels, but I also have the realization that I don't believe in angels, right? At the same time, but the light, that is just pure unconditional love, because we carry that, we come from that light, we carry the light within us. We are light and love beings, but we just get lost here on Earth with all our hate and wars and things like that. But when we can rise to that and understand that we truly are love and light and we come from that, and that's what we return to as well when we leave this realm of existence here on Earth. But as I'm enveloped by this light, I become aware of two spirit guides. And there's one on my right and there's one kind of diagonally to the left. And the one on the right talks to the other spirit guide and he says, "What is she doing here? She can't be here. She has to go back." And I'm like, no, wait a second. It's been 2 years and I'm still struggling trying to understand my first experience. And here I am having this experience. And I said, how does this work? How can I be outside my body and still be me? And the spirit guide on my left says, well, if I told you, you wouldn't remember, but you will remember this. So there is some mechanism. And I've heard other people talk about this too, how there is some control mechanism, but they can sort of decide what you get to remember. And other people, I've heard other people talk about it. It's kind of fascinating because we mm-hmm. think we're in so much control, but really we aren't. And so as I'm standing there, the best description would be, it's like a movie screen just appears in front of you, because there is just images that come. And it is as if I'm standing on the moon and I'm looking down on the Earth from outer space. But around the Earth, this is now 1994, is what I called a silvery, glittery fishnet, because I grew up in the Swedish archipelago during the summers, and I would row the boat for my grandmother and she would lay nets in the ocean. And, you know, as you lift those nets out in the morning sun, those water droplets sort of shimmer and glitter in the morning sunlight. And the fishnet has that diamond shape. So yeah. It looked like, so I called it the glittery, glittery, silvery, glittery fishnet around the Earth. Now you can just Google, right, since we have internet now, but back then we didn't have internet. And you can just Google grid around the Earth and you'll get an idea. It looks almost exactly like that. And so that's what I saw. And then he said, everything on Earth is connected to each other. And everything on Earth is connected up to this grid. And with that information, I got sent back. And now, I mean, think of this, it's 1994. And now that is literally how I work today. And that is my work here, is to help people, because we are all connected. We are connected to each other. We are connected to the plants, to the trees, to the animals. And they have even proved this, right, with physics now. The people that won the Nobel Prize last year, they proved that quantum physics connection. And we know from work from like Stephen Harrod Booner, how we resonate and entrain with everything around us, whether it has a heart or not, right? So we resonate and entrain with the flowers, the trees, right? And all the animals and with everything and with each other, right? Babies co-regulate with their parents, their nervous system. We co-regulate with each other. We constantly synchronize and connect with each other because we are electromagnetic beings. We measure our heart, right? We have an electromagnetic field, the brain waves and all that. So everything, you know, we are connected, but not only are we connected to each other, we're also connected to our ancestors. And so mm-hmm. we think that we go through life and we are separate from everything else. But I would say that is just an illusion that we have in order to have our earthly experience. And it's not until you step into that and understand that what your ancestors did and did not do and the trauma they experienced and wasn't able to resolve gets passed down to their ancestors that come along. So and now there is research on DNA, and it shows that, for example, Holocaust survivors, the FKBP5 gene, and there are some other genes, they can see that the trauma that they experience is actually passed down. And we know it goes all the way to the grandchildren and probably much further as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. I actually written a note by ancestral wounds with DNA, and you just finished off there. So let's carry on that discussion with ancestral wounds. First of all, for those who don't know what ancestral means, what is that?
Yeah, so your ancestors are anybody that came before you. So it's your mom, your dad, grandma, grandpa, and everybody in your family, in your family tree, in your soul family, going back in time. So great-grandpa, great-great-great-grandpa, right? All the way back. All the people that came before you are your ancestors.
Mm. And with the trauma that's being passed on, it's obviously very, very crucial to heal your wounds in order for yourself to step into your full potential as a human being in this life as well, right?
Yes.
And we talked about life path before we started. You were path 11, I'm number 4. Mm-hmm. And you were saying you are here to help heal humanity and raise the frequency and vibration. What does your work look like as a healer?
Yeah, so what that has become is, because of my near-death experiences, my psychic abilities opened up. But now I realize that they were always there. And my teachers, I studied mediumship and trance healing at Arthur Findlay College in England, who is that's a world-renowned school for psychic sciences. And people go there from all over the world to study mediumship. And now I understand that I came to the world that way, but I just, you know, it gets suppressed, because when you're little and you tell your best friend, and I wrote about it in my book, how I would tell my best friend, do you see the field around the flowers on the table? Like we had picked wildflowers or something. And we had them in a vase, and I could see that the aura around the flowers. And my friend looks at me and she goes, "What are you talking about?" And there's nothing there, right? And so then you start thinking as a child when you say that. Or I would tell my brother when we were sitting at my grandmother's house in the archipelago, and I remember seeing a man in the flame of the candle. And I would say, and I would tell my brother, "Do you see that? Do you see that man in the candle, in the flame?" And he's looking at, "What are you talking about?" Right. And I said, "No, no, no, it belongs to grandma." And now I realize, because, you know, I'm just a child, I was maybe 7 or 8 years old, but my grandfather, my grandma's husband, had passed away when I was 3. So it makes perfect sense. And now I know that it's a shamanic way of seeing spirits. So, but all there was a lot of things that were present. I saw auras around people as a child, but then that went away for a while. So a lot of those things were just suppressed, because you tell other people and they say, "It's not there, you're crazy." And you don't tune into that anymore. And I think that's very common And I work with a lot of clients around the world that says, yes, I saw spirits when I was a child. And my mom said, stop talking about it. Right. And I think that's common, especially if you come from a family and the parents don't see it. It can also be frightening for the parents if your child starts saying, you know, I'm playing with this, you know, with this friend, and they're like, there's nobody there. Right. Because yeah. They might be tuned into that, and then they learn that other people can't see it. So now what has happened, because of my experience, I went to medical school when I was 54. So quite at an older age. So my book is called Med School After Menopause, because I was already in menopause and then I went to med school. And it's meant to help other women around the world, because I think that sometimes we think that you enter menopause and life is over, at least, you know, in the old days. Now it's not like that. You know, in the old days, you entered menopause and then you passed away 10 or 20 years later. Now, a lot of people live until they're 100. So, you know, enter menopause, that's only half, you've only lived half of your life.
Yeah.
You got to look at it in a different light, because you're not an mm-hmm. adult until you're 21. And then let's say you enter menopause when you're 50. But if you're going to be 100, you got a long way to go. Right. You haven't even lived half of your life. So I went to med school in 2012, graduated 2016, took my boards, and then did like a residency for 2 years. And that took me to 2018. But as soon as I got out of med school, the spirit world, I was guided to study mediumship. And so now I work as a physician. I work as an evidential medium. So I connect with the loved ones in the spirit world, bring them in, and also create healing that way. Sometimes people have had a traumatic childhood, or maybe they didn't get along with their mom or dad, and they didn't feel like they were seen and heard. And so that spirit comes in and it creates healing, because the spirit in the spirit world knows what they didn't do correctly. So they might say, I'm really sorry that, you know, I was always drunk and I was an alcoholic or whatever. And I'm sorry for all the hardships I caused you. And so that can be a reconciliation there. But then I also work as a medical intuitive. So I work with people around the world. And it's fascinating, because when I studied mediumship at Arthur Findlay College, they told me that because you're a doctor now, it wouldn't surprise us if it goes in that direction as well. And of course it did. And so it started already when I was in medical school. I would see my patients in a meditation 1 or 2 days before I would get that patient on shift. And then, you know, after seeing the patient once or twice, realizing, oh my gosh, this is the patient. And I would have seen things from their childhood that then came out during their visit. And then as soon as I graduated, I would get patients. And as soon as they walked through the door, I would get a diagnosis like lung cancer, liver cancer. And I'm thinking, they're coming in for allergies, or why am I hearing this? And then, but trusting in the spirit, because I kept, you know, hearing it. And it's been, now it's been a long journey, because it started in 1992 and now it's 2016. So this has been going on for many, many years. And of course, every time you run the tests, it always comes true. It's always, the spirit world is always correct in the diagnosis that it gives me. And so I work as a medical intuitive with a lot of people around the world. And sometimes it's like a diagnosis. I've had people show up on my screen and I will say, do you have this disease? And they're like, I don't know. Do I? And then
right.
I'm like, yes, you do. And you have these symptoms that go along with this disease. Because then now my medical training comes in. So I'll hear a diagnosis from the spirit world, even though they haven't even said anything yet. And then I'll say, okay, these are the symptoms. Do you have these symptoms? And they say, yes. And I said, that's it. This is what you have. This is what you need to do. And I've had people, you know, needing surgery and said, no, you have to find a surgeon. This is the kind of surgeon you need. And then they've gone through that process and you know, created healing. So it's kind of fascinating, because it's, you know, many times people get lost in the spirituality of it all. And of course, being a spiritual doctor or a medical intuitive, you get people that say, well, I was diagnosed with cancer, but I know I can heal it. I'm doing all these, fasting and carrot juice and all these different things. But you don't know. I always tell people, you don't know what ticket you're holding, right? So if you have a disease, don't count on that you're going to heal it spiritually. and you're going to get rid of your cancer. And don't, when you're, if you're doing chemotherapy, don't count that that's going to get rid of it. Use all the tools, work on it spiritually, work on it emotionally, work on it with herbs and supplements, do the Western medicine, chemotherapy, put all your berries in that same bag. Why only put one berry in your bag when you have access to all of them? So, you know, incorporate all the different healing modalities that you can incorporate. Don't just do one, because we don't know what your path is. Maybe you incarnated to heal with chemotherapy, or maybe you incarnated to heal with prayer, or maybe you incarnated to heal with carrot juice. But, you know, we don't know exactly what ticket people hold, right? And so it's important to incorporate all the different healing modalities on your healing journeys.
So I'm thinking, if you were saying that we are coming into, if we get a disease, if we obtain a disease, and we're coming into this life, in order for us to heal and remove that disease, has that already been destined the way that the way they should be healed?
I think it can be, right? I feel there are times when I feel like we're just living our movie script that we wrote for ourselves before we incarnated, because I feel sometimes it seems impossible to change things. It's almost, you know, the person who dies by driving the car 5 miles per hour in the parking grocery store parking lot, and then somebody else is driving 100 miles an hour on the freeway. The car is completely totaled, and they walk out of the car with not one scratch. What is that? Right?
Yeah.
So do we all have a timestamp? And, you know, there are people that my best friend who didn't see the aura around the flowers as a child became a nurse. And she's also a medium now, and we often study together at Arthur Findlay College, and we laugh about that, because it doesn't mean that you're not going to be number one a medium later in life just because you didn't see the aura as a child. Everybody has a different path, right? And so you end up on the same path in the end. But I think it's just, you know, individual, depending on what we incarnated to, what experience we incarnated to have. So I think a lot of it is predetermined how that is going to play out. But we don't know, right? We don't know. And the spirit world is not going to tell you, or it's not like you, when you work spiritually, sometimes people think you have a crystal ball. Tell me what's going to happen next week, or tell me, am I going to get this job? Right. I mean, sometimes you can sort of, if the spirit world says, yes, you're going in the right direction, or you might get like a little carrot like that, but they're not going to say what the outcome is, because we have free will. And so let's say you incarnated to learn to stand on your own feet in this life, right? It's a common one, stepping into your own power. But in order to do that, you have to go through these different steps. You might have to go through a divorce, and then now you have everything shifts, and you have to step into your power and find your true self and who you truly are, right? But maybe there are different paths to get there. So I would say that where you're heading, you're still going to end up at that destination, but there's many roads to get there. Just like if you're taking a car trip, you got a couple of different roads to take to get to your destination. And I would say that's the free will part, but you're still going to get to that destination. I feel that, you know, the people that we marry, the people that maybe we have children with, or we fall in love with, or work for, there are people that we're supposed to meet, right? It's like a soul contract. We're supposed to meet that person, maybe be together with them for the rest of our life, or maybe just a few years. And then, oh, they're ready for the next step. And then you go off and do the next thing. But I truly feel that we're literally living our movie script when we're here, because you can't, when you have premonitions and see the future, which I have had many times, see an accident before they happen, see my kids in the car. And that was back when, my children were about 10, my youngest ones were about 10 or 12. So it was probably in the early 2000s. And we had a van at the time. And I woke up in the morning, and it was like three slides. The first slide was a black scratch across the van door on the right-hand side of the car, the one that slides and your kids get in and out.
Yeah.
And then the second image, I see two of my kids in the car, my middle child, which is a boy, in the front seat, and then my daughter in the back seat. And then the third slide I see I'm leaving a note on the windshield of a black sedan car. I'm not thinking, what is this? If I'm in an accident, my two kids are in the car, why don't I see other people? Why didn't I see, you know, a police car or an ambulance? Why can't I say, why am I leaving a note on that windshield? Right. And that's all I could see. And so I told these two kids, I said, this is what I saw. And so we figured out the intersection that it was most likely that we could have an accident. And my kids were students at the San Francisco Ballet School at the time. And we lived in East Bay, San Francisco. So every day we drove into the city and I had to cross the Bay Bridge, which is a big bridge. Yeah. And as soon as we get off the Bay Bridge, we go down onto the streets, the surface streets, and we get to a light and we have to turn left at that light. But that's the only intersection where the right-hand side of the car is exposed to oncoming traffic. In that whole trip, in going back and forth to San Francisco, that's the only left turn with oncoming traffic. So we're thinking it's got to be that intersection. So every day we get to the intersection, my kids' noses are pressed up against the window, looking, Mom, the coast is clear. There's no cars. And we're like, okay. And we do this for like 10 days. And then we are in Walnut Creek, East Bay, for people who know where that is, at the bookstore. And we come out of the bookstore, and I'm coming out of the garage, and the parking lot is really crowded, and there's a big truck offloading boxes of books. And I'm trying to make a right-hand turn onto this very narrow street. And as I make a right-hand turn, the right-hand side of my car scrapes the car that is parked. And it's a black sedan car. So as this happens, I realize that is the scratch. So I get out of my car, I walk around, and I see the black scratch exactly the way I had described to my kids. And I just start laughing. So literally, like, I throw my hands up in the air, I'm looking at the sky, and I'm just laughing. People who walk by must have thought I was absolutely nuts, this crazy woman to like just scrape the car, and now she's laughing at it. But we were so relieved that this was finally over. We had been waiting and waiting and waiting for this, you know, what is this? And what's going to happen? So, of course, here I am leaving the note on the black sedan car on the windshield saying, hey, sorry, I scraped your car. Here's my information. So I can't change that, right? So I see what's going to happen. And then you just wait and wait and wait and wait. So there's many incidences like that. And that's why I say we are living out our movie script, because I think so much more is already predetermined or predestined. But we're under the illusion that we'd make all the decisions, and we do. Now, what am I going to have for dinner? I'm going to have meatballs, or am I going to have something fish, right? So I think that's pretty random. But when it comes to the bigger things in life, like who are you going to marry, what are you going to do, the lessons you're learning, mm-hmm. I think that is part of some form of a contract that we are then living out to learn certain lessons in this life in order to, you know, grow our soul and become better humans in the end, better creating more love and peace on the earth.
The being a medical intuitive as well, and how this will change the medicine world, because there's so many different sides to a coin, right? Hundreds. Do you think this will, with intuition, and the more we're raising our frequency and becoming more tapping into our intuition, all of us, how do you think medicine will change for the better in the future?
Yeah, I think, you know, we need to incorporate more different healing modalities. We're very scientific right now in our Western medicine, thinking it's, you know, it's this is what you do. This is the diagnosis. We prove it with this lab test, and this is the medicine you get. But that typically doesn't heal the person. It suppresses the symptoms and it makes that person's life manageable. And so there are many great medicines, right? If you're in pain, you can take the pain away. Right. So there is lots of great things about medicine, but it doesn't heal the underlying issue. Now, how do we get to that part? How do we create healing for that? And I think the only way that we can really heal people, you know, is to work on all the levels. We have to work on it spiritually, emotionally, and physically. We can't just work on it physically. Like a lot of the way Western medicine is set up is you go to the doctor, you have a headache. or you have depression or whatever it is, the doctor gives you a medication, but it doesn't resolve anything. But when you look at things ancestrally, there are patterns that repeat within the families, right? Not only do we get the same diseases the parents had, but the emotions, the emotional component. So you might have, you might be sick with something. So you feel alone and lonely and nobody cares for you and you feel deserted and you can't, go to work because you have some disease. Now, it doesn't even have to be the same thing that, let's say, your mom had, but your the pattern of the emotional component is often repeating as well. So, you look at the epigenetics, they proved, for example, there was a great study in 2013 called Epigenetic Inheritance of Ancestor Odor Fear Conditioning. And it was a study that was done at Emory University School of Medicine. And I think it was led by Brian Diaz. And it was published in Nature back in 2013. But what they did, they proved that we inherit the trauma. And so they took little mice, and then every time the mice smelled cherry blossom, they would get an electric shock. Well, the little mice, of course, learned to avoid the cherry blossom smell because they knew they would get a shock. Then they took the sperm from those male mice, artificially inseminated the female mice. So they didn't even meet. They just took the sperm, and then those little mice babies, the offspring of that mother, were also fearing the cherry blossom, even though they had never encountered it themselves, because it was passed down from the sperm of the father. And so they know, right? So it's epigenetics. So it's the same thing with Holocaust survivors and anything else. So when, for example, if you think of all the people that lived through the war, like my parents, they all lived through the war. And my grandma lived through World War I and World War II. And the fear of, that. And when I grew up in Sweden, I remember that the first Monday of every month, the sirens would go off at 3 p.m., walking to school. And we would always look at each other. Oh, no, it's just the first Monday. Whew, right. Should we run home or take shelter? Because it was, post-war era. And this is in the 1960s, but that was still going on. But when you look at, how things get passed down. So let's say grandpa fought in the war. Every time he heard that siren go off, he said, "This is it. I'm going to die today. This is the day I die." And it creates this tremendous fear. And he takes shelter and he survives the war. And then he marries and he has kids. And then his kids have kids. So now you got the granddaughter. And the granddaughter, every time she hears the siren go off, doesn't matter what it is, a fire truck, let's say, she gets a panic attack. But she never had any trauma in her own life. She was never in an accident. She was never in a situation where 911 was called, an ambulance and police or fire came. She's never had her own experience with sirens causing a trauma for her. So where is that coming from? It's coming from grandpa. So it's his trauma that wasn't resolved, his fear that was passed down via epigenetics to her. But not only do we inherit things on the DNA that wasn't resolved by our ancestors, we're also connected through quantum physics. And that's what the people who won the Nobel Prize last year pretty much proved, because I think they talked about the atoms, and once two atoms meet, they get entangled. And it doesn't matter if you separate them, because whatever happens to the first one affects the other one, right? Because they once met. But it's very similar. So even if you never met your grandpa or grandma, they might have passed away before you died, what you might still have picked up on unresolved traumatic experiences from their lives. So when you think of what you might have inherited, it's typically all the things that were swept under the carpet that your parents didn't want to talk about. Oh, we don't talk about uncle, this uncle or that grandpa, right? It's something that's hush hush about it, and it's not resolved. It's an unresolved traumatic experience. And that's what typically gets passed on and passed down the line. So it's fascinating, because when you work with it, you understand how that message that I got in, back in 1994, everything on Earth is connected and everything is connected up to the grid. Literally, that is how I work today, because I see it when I work with people. And when we figure out, in order to resolve that, right, you have to figure out, well, where is it coming from? I have these issues. Nobody knows what's wrong with me or blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, let's look at it ancestrally then and see where it's coming from. But then once we realize, oh my gosh, there it is. This is exactly what happened. And it's like you're detangling a puzzle. And then you see where it is. Now you can create healing for that. And so then I guide my clients on what I call a meditation that is a combination of a trans healing and a shamanic soul journey, where we create communication with the spirit world, the people that are in the spirit world, and send them healing for the things that we found, and then also to the client and forward in time, so that we can set that energetic frequency back to where it should be, so that we can create healing. And the fascinating part is that, you know, people all of a sudden, I mean, I have had people say, you know, my depression is gone or my colitis is gone. Things, you know, change with that healing, because we know from like the intention experiments and Lynn McTaggart's work. She's in England, right? And all the things that she's been working. I remember reading her books back in the 1990s. When you set an intention, right, you can change things. And then done experiments across the world with big universities on having people set an intention. But it's the same thing. Once you know what it is that you're trying to heal, and you can create healing for it. And that's what's so beautiful. So I always tell my clients, you know, never, ever give up, because there's always possibilities to create healing.
Mm. And we all carry some trauma with us. No one can escape trauma, right?
No, everybody has trauma. Because otherwise, you know, why did we incarnate? If it's, you know, if we sat on the Hawaiian beach drinking pina coladas every day, life would be pretty boring. Right. It's all the difficulties,
the contrast
that we have to overcome, right? Mm-hmm. That creates the growth for our soul. It's very difficult sometimes to go through life, because sometimes you just feel like you're at a dead end, and how am I going to get out of this? Or my life doesn't work, and you get frustrated, but it's the human experience. But, you know, when that happens, I always tell people, remember, everything is temporary. It is just temporary. Whatever it is, I don't care how sick you are or how sad you are, it's temporary, because it's an obstacle that you're here to overcome. It's just a hurdle that you're climbing over, and it's just temporary. There is light at the end of the tunnel. You just have to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. What has been your biggest fear in your life so far?
My biggest fear? What's my biggest fear? That's a good question. I'm thinking, what is it? What fear do I still have fears? And what was my biggest fear? I'm not sure I have any, you know, fears anymore like that, because I'm just, you know, I trust in the spirit world. I trust in my path. And so it becomes, you know, you step into your true power of who you are and why you're here. And so everything, you, I mean, at this point, I know that everything, doesn't matter how stressed or you can be about something, it's always going to work out, because so there is really no fear about things like that. Do I still have a fear? I have a fear of snakes. I wouldn't want to meet like a big, you know, a big snake or a crocodile or something like that. I wouldn't know what to do. So, you know, I guess I'm fearful of is getting myself in a situation like that. But, you know, fear of, or the, all the shootings that happen nowadays, you know, people go into the mall and they get, you know, caught in a shooting spree, things like that, that definitely I would have a fear of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. But at the same time, I trust in the spirit world. I trust that I won't. Mm. And I'm always in communication with the spirit world. I typically don't even get in my car without saying, all right, which freeway do I take? 10, 101, 202, the 17. And yeah, if I get, and sometimes I'm like, oh, they're all good. But sometimes I'll get, not the 10. I said, all right, how about the 101 or the 202? Right. And so, and many times I've had experiences to avoid accidents. And it was when I was living up in the mountains after I graduated, and I'm reaching for my purse and my car keys off the kitchen counter. And all of a sudden, I see a big red truck, and it's swirling out into the left lane and then back into the right lane. And I see mountains on the side. So I know it's the 17 freeway that goes back down into Phoenix. And I hear, watch out for the red truck. And I say, I just look up and I say, thank you, Spirit World, for the warning. I get in the car. I drive 40 minutes. I get to the 17. Once I'm on the 17, I go down and all these trucks, right? They're hauling down. It's a major freeway going back down to Phoenix from the mountains. I see, you know, black truck, white truck, all these trucks. All of a sudden, I'm in the left lane. I'm coming up and I look and it's a red truck. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to pass it because there is a car that's already passing it. But you know how it is on the freeway? You just kind of hang behind each car. Mm-hmm. But I give that car space and I stay behind the truck in the left lane. And there's a railing on my left side so that I don't have a shoulder to pull off. There's no way for me to go should that truck swirl out into the left lane. So I stay behind the truck and it keeps going. And I wait for the car in front of me to get all the way in front. And then I said, okay, once I don't have the railing and I get a shoulder and the car in front of me is far enough in front, then I will speed through because I have somewhere to go on the left. Well, as I'm waiting for the car to be, you know, give me more space. So the other car is now completely in front of the truck. I'm completely behind the truck. What happens? The red truck completely swirls out all the way in the left lane and then back in the right lane. And again, I just look, you know, I'm just like, thank you, Spirit World. Thank you for that warning. And, you know, now, you know, I mean, so it's several instances like that, that's just literally life-saving. And so, you know, is that just the Spirit World? Is that just the Spirit World giving me training wheels and say, well, let's see if she listens, right? What is that? What is it when you see an event in the future and then you just wait for it to take place? Right. So how much of our life is really predetermined and we're just maneuvering it, living our movie script, right?
It is so, exactly how I think it is as well. It's just everything, all the big lessons and the people. Mm-hmm. And then we have some smaller choices to make. And we think we're in so much control, right?
Right. Right. Exactly. It's an illusion. That's all I can say. And we spend so much time worrying, right? We worry about things. And I think that's one of the lessons we're all here to learn is just to say, okay, enough with the worrying. I can't change what's going to come. I mean, I can plan things to try and avoid things if I'm worried about things. But ultimately, you can't be there. Let's say you're worrying about your child that's traveling across on the other side of the ocean. Right. All you can do is send healing and send, you know,
love and light,
wellness to that person, but you're not there. You can't change anything. But you spend so much time worrying about the outcome of things. And I think one of the things is just to learn to let go, enjoy the moment, because all we have is this one moment.
Where do you hope we are in 10 years from now in the world?
10 years in the world.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that the world is a less crazy place than it is now. I hope that, you know, we will rise to, you know, see the differences that we see, you know, of the different populations on Earth, and come to meet that and accept each other, because in the end, we're all just the same human being. And it's just learning, you know, to learn about other cultures, to learn about other people, and figure out a way to get along and work so that everybody can have food and shelter and safety in their life, because it's not until we have that, you know, we all need to have safety first, right? Because if we can't have safety, we just create more war. So we have to create the safety for people and the love and the connection and food, medicine, just basic needs. Once we get there, we can start, you know, open up our arms and talk to each other. So I hope that we're going to have a more peaceful world in 10 years than we have right now.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lotte, for coming today and sharing your wonderful expertise and your knowledge and your wisdom. You're such an amazing healer and a wonderful light worker, and the world needs you more than ever right now. So thank you so much for your massive mission.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
hope you got some valuable information today. Wake up, wake up. And thanks for checking in and waking up. See you next time.